Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Masters of the Air and the Bloody 100th documentary are both over, but we are just getting started talking about it here on Post Show Recaps. My name is Ariel, and for the last time, unfortunately, I am joined by the only co-pilot I ever wanted. It's Rich. Billy, what's up?
What is up, Ariel? I'm sad that it's our last podcast over here at Post Show Recaps, but I'm really glad that one of the final podcasts of Post Show Recaps will be us talking about this show. We're going to fly our last mission together. We're going to drop some aid out there for
the
people.
Yeah, it's a peaceful mission this time.
It is. Yeah, we're out of wartime. We're going to talk documentary. I'm really glad, Ariel. This is like a great kind of punctuation. I was saying before we hit record here that we've spent a lot of time talking about it this season, but Band of Brothers was so important to us that as we're coming to like the end of an era of PSR, I'm glad to be able to punctuate it with just a little bit of emotional resonance centered on Band and our affection for it, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. And I will admit this now because I think I should just get it off my chest once and for all. It's as good a time as any. I sometimes have a hard time letting go of things that mean a lot to me. So I never actually went and watched the Band of Brothers documentary that they made because very selfishly, I remember at the time being like, no, like I don't want, like I'm already so sad the thing is over, like that will just be like a more finite overness, and like if I keep that for some mysterious future date, I'll always have that to like return to as an extra piece. And then watching this one, I was like, damn, I really gotta go back and correct that mistake.
I kind of love that energy. I love the confession at the end. That's it's very fun that you're only just revealing this. But I can really relate to that. Like, I have video games that I will play like a crazy no life 12 hours a day until I get to like the final sequence, and then I'll put them down for 3 months because like I don't want to finish them. The Wheel of Time, 14 book series. With a prequel. I have a friend who has read the whole series. He started it like 20 years ago, man. He's been like reading and reading. And he's like, no, I'm not going to read the prequel. It's like the Desmond Hume energy of like, no, I'm saving this one for like really when I know I'm running out of time. Uh-huh. You know? So like, I get it. Because I think at the end, we've talked about like rewatching Band of Brothers, right? And like, that's part of it for me. Like, I don't want to let that go. I'm exactly the same way. And there is this reality that sinks in when you see the real men, these real soldiers at the later stages of their lives, and you have to realize like, oh God, like this is like true finality to all of it. So I don't blame you, like totally relate, you know?
Yeah, no, it's one day maybe, but that's not for us to discuss today. I will close the door on the confession corner for now at least. But yeah, this documentary that they made about the Masters of the Air characters slash historical context, adding that they made called the Bloody 100th, you had called out, and I thought it would be agreed with you really that it would be like really cool to just cover it and give us one last opportunity, you know, to like close the loop on everything. And, you know, I think I walked into it kind of expecting certain things. I think you're just there's a certain visual language that this kind of documentary has. But once again, the characters that I know and love, and like learning about some of these real people, like I was very pleasantly surprised by how emotionally I was engaged with some of this stuff.
Yeah, the thing that I wasn't expecting, and something that like we've talked about a little bit over the past couple of weeks, is that delineation that like these Masters of the Air actors didn't have access to the soldiers in the way that the guys did in the late 90s, early 2000s as they're making right. band, right? So as soon as we got into this documentary, there's a couple of beats, like Hank's narration is great. It's very fun to be able to get Hanks and Spielberg at like the forward facing side of the camera for something like this. But as we see these actual pilots showing up aerial, that's like really what struck me, to be like, oh my gosh, Rosie and like Lucky Luckadoo, and there he is, here's our boy Crosby. Like that delighted me, because I really wasn't expecting it. I thought it was kind of a documentary that had been put together in the last year, and I'm not thinking about access to all that archival footage, but it reminded me, Ariel, of like back around the time that Band was being made, Steven Spielberg, if I recall right, this is like very anecdotal, I remember there being this whole conversation happening where he was really trying to interview as many World War II survivors as possible and get archives and recordings of those interviews, because of the point that we've talked about of like that generation aging out and that generation even coming to a point that like their memories maybe weren't that same steel trap they had previously, you know? So I was like, oh, this is great. And I was kind of left with the question of whether or not this was footage that Spielberg captured that might have kind of like informed some of the choices of how they structured Masters of the Air, or if this is more like, you know, just general archival footage that they were able to get of the guys from the 100, because they were a really notable unit, as is pointed out in the doc, right?
No, for sure. It definitely feels like some of the, you know, and they did a good job for some of the quote unquote older footage of like putting timestamps and giving us some context. Like I'm thinking specifically of Rosie's, I believe, footage being shot in like 97.
Yeah.
And like it definitely feels, to your point, like there was this like curation collection effort, and like this is the, you know, like if not for you know, Steven Spielberg and some of like these organizations that I'm sure he got this stuff from, this stuff either not seeing the light of day or certainly not getting the kind of attention or exposure that it's getting now in this documentary. So it feels, to that point, it like the documentary is serving as a quote unquote real life version of what the series itself is attempting to do and like keeping these stories alive.
No, 100%. It just was so fun to see Harry Crosby show up. I'm like, oh my god, this guy looks so cool too.
I yelled and it's like, right? Crosby, I was like, yes, my guy Crosby, which I was so there was an event, I think, that Apple had put on this week or last week, where like some of the actors went and they had like a talk, and what's his name, Anthony Boyle, who plays Crosby, like as soon as I hear his British accent, I'm like, you're taking me out again, like you've pulled a Winters on me yet again, you fake lovely lovable American. It was awesome, and like to hear and to see like the camaraderie between the actors and what it meant to them, it was like nice to hear from some of those people. But yeah, when I saw Crosby in this documentary, I was like, there he is, that's our guy.
It's fantastic. It was so good to see him and just hear him talking about it, to like get their words a little bit. You know, what else really struck me, Ariel? Something that we've talked so much about, how I certainly did over the course of this podcast, how this is a war unlike anything these guys had ever done before, right? And how kind of just out of their element, how alien it all was. But something Hank says in the early narration of the doc that really hit me was, this will never happen again. this type of combat will never happen again. Mm-hmm. And it seems very obvious in kind of retrospect. Obviously, air power in the 21st century is really different. I mean, the way that these planes operate, the way they move, the kind of speeds they're operating at, like, it's a different world out there. The amount of like technological advancements that have occurred in the last 80 years, the, like, you know, surface to air missiles and the computer guidance and like jets and stealth technology, right? Like, there was something so tactile about what they were doing and kind of intimate, right? Where they're in these tiny tin cans, these sardine boxes flying around up there, and can like see the whites of each other's eyes. They could see the haircuts of these Luftwaffe pilots as they're coming in at the cockpits of those planes. And it really did hit me of like, gosh, it's such a singular moment of time, right? Like, nothing like this will ever happen again until we restart civilization after the apocalypse and repeat the whole cycle, you know,
et cetera.
Like, that really like stayed with me, you know, like, just how unique this whole experience was for the airmen of World War II.
Yeah, exactly. And how, like, and you had already said a lot of these things, so I spent a lot of this time being like, yep, I know that, but only because Rich told me, but I learned it, and I was paying attention when he said it, of like, you know, they had never been on a plane before, and they weren't even trained how to use their parachutes, which is just, like, insane.
That's crazy,
to me.
Right? Insane. Not even once. They don't even make them jump off that tower, that easy company head.
Anything. Jump out of that tree over there. Like,
Somebody send Commander Sobel to these guys. What is happening?
Okay. It is so, so funny that you say that, because there was that point in the documentary where I can't remember what that other commander's name is who comes in, and he basically like runs
towards
the training with them, and just like over and over and over again until they get the formation. Like, tighter formation, tighter formation. They're like, oh, tighter formation. And I was like, oh my God, this is exactly what Sobel was doing. And thankfully for the band in Band of Brothers, they were like, that's what their tight formation, quote unquote, their emotional connection between them, as we talked about at the time, like, was forged under the duress of this terrible man who they all hated. But like, they got so close to each other because of it. It was like, wow, they really did need Sobel. They needed their Curry moment episode. It's wild. But unfortunately for them, it came after they had already lost like many of their fellow servicemen.
Some of those numbers really hit you. You know, I mean, we saw it, we watched the show, but like, yeah, when they say they got there with 140 commanders, by the end, there were two who were still able to fly. Like, oh my gosh, right? It's like, it's staggering. And what also really struck me, it's something that we talked about across the series, the way that we looked at a guy like Harry Crosby and are like, look, like, he's stepping out of his marriage. You know, the way that we looked like at Egan and Clevin and like, look, like, you know, one's an alcoholic, right? Like, he's like a bit out of control and rambunctious. And like, we kind of examined the flaws of these men to a degree. We didn't create these kind of unimpeachable heroes in them. So what really struck me about the documentary was how it was a little bit subversive, directed towards the narrative of the show. Like, the way that it depicted specifically Egan and Clevin, I mean, it certainly elevates them, and it like carries forward that idea that the men, that the rest of like the battalion, like, looked up to these guys, that they thought they were immortal, that they were like their consummate swaggering leaders with their scarves and their cocked hats, right? But this other idea that wasn't part of the narrative of the show, that like, yeah, they were reckless and they were ballsy, and like, that's part of why the Bloody 100th got shellacked, and part of like why they got overrun. I mean, there is also the matter of experience, which I really appreciate what the documentary did of outlining the time frame of things, to your point, just through the opening credits of like, look how late in the war we are by the time that like we're even showing up over there. And then it's still not even like another 6 months before we get the Mustangs and are actually like playing now, right? But the Luftwaffe had been fighting a war for 5 years. These pilots had been over Italy, over all of Europe, fighting every European pilot out there. And I know like the Belgian Air Force doesn't necessarily have like the biggest reputation in the world, right? But they were all live action training in like real combat scenarios. They just were so much more experienced than these kids who barely knew how to put a parachute on that came over from Kentucky, right? Like, it's wild to me the way that it highlighted that. But the kind of discussion of Egan and Clevens as like,
yes,
how responsible were they for being the cavalier kind of reckless leaders felt really bold.
Yeah. No, and my favorite thing about learning and seeing pictures of them, of Buck and Bucky, was like, I appreciated the characterization more as played by Callum Turner and Austin Butler. Like, the way, because it does come off a little bit, especially and unfortunately for the Austin Butler part of it, of just like him kind of like playing up a certain kind of pride or machismo or whatever.
The little but then when Captain you learn, America, right?
That you like... learn about these real life people and you're like, holy crap, like this is exactly what they were trying to get at. And like, it, you know, it's hard to give exposition in a TV show that's going to give you like a lot of this stuff, but it was so, even the way like they talk about, they would like, you know, cock their hats off to the side and like be so comfortable. I was like, oh wow, yeah, these sound like exactly the two people that we met on the show. And I think that's actually to the show's credit.
Yeah, it tracks. You know, it's so dumb. I went to private school while I was in high school. We all had uniforms, but like that thing of like when everybody's got to wear a uniform, like cocking your hat all of a sudden is like the difference.
Yeah,
that's your freak flag flying high, right? Like, oh, that's your swagger, you know, that's your riz or whatever. And so I think it's like really, you know, that kind of stuff, the way that it translates generationally of like, we could roll our eyes a little bit, but also like, no, they were cool and they knew they were cool and everybody looked at them like, yo, they're so cool, you know.
And they didn't have to be, you know, they didn't have to be flying those missions. They did it because they chose to, which just made them even cooler and more respected.
Yeah, it's great, you know, the highlighting of that, the kind of contradictions of like, they were young, reckless guys who, especially when we're talking about Egan, might have been like a little bit out of control and not always like making the most responsible decisions regarding his self-preservation, but that they were idolized because of that in part. And the idea that once they got knocked out of the sky, that was like a real paradigm shift for the boys in the plains of like, oh, wow, this got very real, you know? The other thing that really struck me, and I mean, you know how much I kind of enjoy digging into the actual history here, but getting to see so much of the footage of the planes, Ariel, like seeing those planes with three engines down, seeing a couple of those planes with like the tail stabilizers like gone, watching them land with no landing gear and just like kind of like drag out across the grass on the ground there, like you get a real sense of the authenticity of what we were talking about, the way that these things like could, fly to Africa with a hole in the cockpit or whatever, you know?
Yeah, no. And I was just about to mention that mission, the let's fly to North Africa and no big deal mission, as I call it. It was like almost more harrowing with such little actual footage and a lot of like graphic representation, it felt so much more harrowing to hear all the details of like what was actually going on and like to see on the map like where they had to go and like to learn about the fun, like all these notes that the show already hit, but to again like hearing the real life people. And for the most, you know, they did use historians here and there, but for the most part, this is like people who were there are talking about this, regardless of how long ago it was that they, you know, captured the footage of these people talking about it. It's kind of incredible, like what they pull off in like that part, because you kind of find yourself feeling again, to the show's credit, like, oh God, yes, this. Oh no. Oh my God, 2 hours? The fog? No, this is crazy. And then like the planes being made out of aluminum, which is just so crazy to think about. And like, of course, right, the planes already weigh so much, they have to do everything they can to like keep them as light as possible to be able to stay in the air and bomb these places, and the bombs obviously weigh a lot. It was wild. Like, they're just walking around with like they're flying around with holes in the hull of the planes. And of course and then the other thing, oh my God, the shrapnel, like seeing the
flak,
the flak, thank you, be represented. And then like the way they're explaining both how things fall out of the plane and how the flak just like explodes in the air gives like so much more context to what we had already seen in the show. It's like, it was like they're shooting at like a piece of bread. It's crazy. Like it's insane that any of them survived at all, frankly.
It's really nuts. Yeah. I mean, like I say, I joke around on this podcast a lot of like, I drive old tractors and I have old boats and like that kind of stuff. And this stuff, you take it for granted, but you really could like without much effort, take a screwdriver and punch it through the side of the plane, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was very fragile. The conditions up there, like we go back to Crosby, like throwing up in those early days, this was a major problem because it would freeze in the oxygen mask. And you know, so they couldn't breathe, right? Like now you have a whole other cycle happening. I don't mean to get too hard. The whole plane, they talked about like the ecology inside of it, the way, I mean, it's very cramped when you actually see footage in there, but I'm with you where when we got the context, this is something that we criticized a few times.
Yes,
Lost Masters of the Air, having the greater context for that Regensburg mission, like part of what the show did is they wanted to keep us in the perspective of the characters. And we talk about it when Clevens disappears and we're like, oh my god, they killed Phaedra Utha, like what happened to Austin Butler, what is going on here, right?
And then may your spirit chatter.
Yeah, your B-17 or your fortress chip and chatter, Butler. They do that because they want us in the perspective of Egan, of like, oh, my buddy's gone, but he's not, he's just sitting there at the camp waiting for you, right? And I think they did it also with that Regensburg mission where we go up with the boys and then we find out the other battalion's not coming, but we don't have the clarity that the doc gives us of like, no, you know why they took off, because they trained to fly in the English fog and the other battalion didn't, and that left them in this like absolutely devastating position, you know. The other one that struck me was like, it was actually I think that Regensburg mission where they talk about there were like 1,000 Luftwaffe like planes in the air that they hit just like this wall of resistance as they were coming in. Like, gosh, it's got to be terrifying, man. Lucky Luckadoo was one of the characters on the documentary that wasn't featured as prominently on the show. I think that he was there, but he's got such an interesting story. This is a guy that came back and lived to 102 in his like very old age. And I was really like psyched to see him and hear him talking about it. But he's one of these guys that like he flew his 25 missions and was like, I think I need to go home. You know, like I don't think I should keep doing this. And to hear that, like, you can't dispute that this guy like did the impossible and is a hero, and it makes a Rosie Rosenthal that much more effing impressive, right? Of like, oh wow, yeah, okay, 52 missions, okay,
right? That Rosie fought that instinct and like still was able to do it. And I love to the documentary's credit, I appreciated that it wasn't like, oh, look at this loser, like he decided not to go. It was like no one person's experience certainly obviously is more important, but like is more because we have like in the context of the show, right, there's like a dramatic weight to like, wow, look at this hero who like refuses to give up, like, and there's something almost narratively in like a fiction boring about a person making the very realistic and human decision of like, yeah, I already defied death like more than a dozen times, I think I'm good, like I think I'm gonna take the hint. It's like, how can you can't fault this person. And obviously the documentary does not, and I appreciated that they even kept it in there because I think it is an important point of view to stand in for other people who made similar decisions. And to your point, also differentiates, like, it's not a value judgment of like who decided to stay versus who didn't. It was just like who decided to stay, period, and who decided to like that they had seen enough. Like, there's no, you know, they talk about it extensively in this, they didn't have the words for, they didn't have the phrase for like PTSD, but they, you know, what do they call in this series, like flak happy, like,
yeah, just combat like fatigue was combat the term fatigue, on the doc,
right? There's all this like euphemistic like vagaries of, you know, turns of phrases, and it's that's just how it was. And like, you the way that like we saw some of these people have like, you know, quote unquote, like mental health breaks and all the R&R, and sometimes the R&R needed to be like just for the rest of your life, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we, you know, we talked about it extensively, but that yo-yo of like, you're going to go fly and you're going to cling to your life for 5 hours. And then you're going to go home and you're going to go to the pub and dance and like, you know, flirt and like have a good, and then tomorrow 4 o'clock in the morning, we'll wake you up again. And we're going to go say
another last supper,
jaws of death. Right. That like back and forth, breaking people down. You know, if you go back to like Rosie going to the Flack House, like they called it in the documentary, like that preventative care, you know, there's a thing that like, we're so much more aware of in 2024, the idea that like a little can go a long way, that you have to kind of take care of people to like not have them like come apart, that mental health is, can be like a fragile thing, but it's really, it's tough to like really reflect on it and imagine the kind of lack of language and tools that they had to clarify what was going on there. And just again, how absolutely overwhelming that experience was. Like the reality of, I've been asked to do a lot of things that I don't know how to do. And that could be really scary, Ariel. Yeah. Like, hey, come be a guest on this podcast for a show that you may not know. And we hit record and all of a sudden my heart's fluttering a little bit and I'm going, oh, I'm nervous. I'm getting, my hands are clammy, palms sweaty. Right? Mom spaghetti. It's a whole scenario. And then like you think about the fact of like, you're on a B-17, 20,000 feet in the air. Everything inside the plane is on fire. It smells like vomit and hydraulic fluid and like burned gunpowder. Your people, like half the crew is dead all around you. And now you got to take this bed sheet that you got strapped to your back that you have no real vague idea how to use and jump. Lucky, and he said, I looked and he says, you couldn't even see the ground. The ground looked about a million miles away, but it, you gotta do it, right? You gotta go. It is what it is. That kind of like, to be faced with the impossible and have to drive into it. It's really, it's striking, man. It's striking, the like lack of clarity. And the other thing that really hit me is the revelation of like how many of the 100th were at Stalag Luft 3. Like as these guys are getting captured, that worst possible fear to them, which may sound morbid, but like I can relate to the idea that like for these 22-year-old kids, it was better idea to imagine dying gloriously in combat than captured by the horrific, monstrous German enemy, right?
Right. And whatever whatever unknown horrors would await you there.
Exactly. But then to be captured and find all your buddies hanging out there and they're building a radio and the British are tunneling out the other side. Like, obviously, it was still a pretty harrowing experience. But I think the reset of perspective, the way that like, that's such a part of like turning these guys from boys into men of like, oh, no, life is important. Right. It's the Hamilton thing of like dying is easy and living is harder. And like, yes, this is terrifying. But that revelation of like, oh, wow, we didn't lose as many men as we thought we did. They're sitting here behind bars in Germany. Right.
Yeah. And that's, and you know, we, the like the simplest representation of, you know, Egan and Clevin finding each other again at the camp, both on the show and in real life, and how it's like, yeah, the situation sucks, but I thought my best friend was dead and now he's alive. And it's like, yeah, you're conflicted emotionally, but there's no doubt that you're completely ecstatic and grateful that you get to see this person again, even under these incredibly harrowing and horrible circumstances. It's complicated, just like all of war. Like there was, and the way like to hear the real life Crosby to that point talk about like, when he said the word like friends of he says friends of all friends, it was just like day of all days. Like there was a way which like, it was all kind of the same thing and very like Band of Brothers-y. But like they saved my life multiple times, you know, we were there for each other. And when I love that Steven Spielberg is like, and I'm laughing because it sounds so stupid, but like he's clearly some sort of expert on like a lot of this stuff, right? Because he took, like you said, he took responsibility and like some sense of ownership of like wanting to amplify these stories and these messages and all this history of like and this is something you said all the time, what became important ultimately in those moments was not like we need to fight the Germans for the good of the country. It's I need to save my friend who might die. I need to save this person who has become like my literal brother, and I will remember for the rest of my life, you know, regardless of who survives and who doesn't. It's like, that's like, what's more human and relatable than that? It's, you know, nothing.
Through the glorious bond of brotherhood formed under combat, we few, we band of brothers. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, it relates, man. This is the transcendent stuff to storytelling. You talked earlier about the idea that, like, you know, some of these guys are exalted as heroes. It's very Edge of Tomorrow. I mean, this is part of, like, war. You need heroes in war. You need, yeah, like, your Angel of Verdun, your Rita Verdasky to be like, yes, rally around, right, the Buck, right, and the Buckies and the Rosies and, like, the Lucky Luckadoos that, like, the Dick Winters and mm-hmm, and the Lieutenant Spears, that, like, these men embolden your courage when they talk about these guys coming, you know, being subjected to the PTSD. And the idea that, like, we looked at it in the episodes, and it's so cold, Ariel, that they're cleaning out the bunks when these planes are going down in the air before the rest of them even land. But you, yeah, can also understand that, like, dude, this is such a careful ecosystem. Like, we are so delicately trying to preserve the morale and the wherewithal, yeah, and the will to continue, because we need these boys to wake up and do it tomorrow. You know, you get that little Jimmy Stewart stinger at the beginning, right? Like, holy cow. First of all,
I jumped up in my seat. I'm like, Jimmy Stewart, what the hell are you doing here?
So this is the thing, for anybody who, like, doesn't know, Jimmy Stewart, Pearl Harbor happens. America's, like, perspective changes. We were, yeah, very uncertain about our involvement in the war. I think, mm-hmm, that it echoes a lot of the conversation that we're having in 2024 about the U.S.'s role in foreign military conflict, when we step in, where we step in, how we fight foreign aggressors, you know, these dual situations in Ukraine and Gaza right now. Like, you can't help but reflect on this and these issues and these quandaries of what's the U.S.'s role in foreign policy. And the reality is that Pearl Harbor happens, and, like, you know, the question was taken off the table. Mm-hmm. It was no longer a debate what the United States was going to do. Japan decided for us, and in many ways for the world, and thank the gods that they did, because you could see here, like, again, I don't want to be too reductive, but if not for the inclusion of, like, the American industrial workforce, that's the actual, like, linchpin that wins this war, because they're, yeah, building these P-51 fighters that are going to clear the air over Europe so that we can have a D-Day, right? Right. But just to, like, rewind it back to the Jimmy Stewart of it all, D-Day happens, and this country was galvanized. I mean, or D-Day, Pearl Harbor. I mean, I lived through September 11th, and that was a pretty specific time, right? But I can only imagine it was like that. We talked about D-Day so much when that happened. The country rallied, and Jimmy Stewart signed up, and he went and did his Captain America job. He did his tours, yeah, man. War bonds. We got to drive funding, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, even, like, Roosevelt at the beginning, the whole, like, lead up of, like, if we let Germany conquer Europe and Japan has conquered Asia, they will control half the world and be able to bring incredible resources to bear. At the end of the day, Ariel, that's, mm-hmm, what it's all about. It's the ball bearing plants. You know, it sounds, yeah, stupid, right, but, like, that's the war machine. And, right, so it's just wild to see a guy like Jimmy Stewart out there. Like, could you even imagine a reality where, like, you know, Hugh Jackman, Timothy Chalamet are, like, over there, like, oh, out, like, recruiting people? Like, it just seems so alien to,
yeah, yeah, the, yeah, no, you're right,
that we have today. You know what I mean?
It's a completely, yeah, it's a completely different.
Chalamet's Canadian. I'm sorry. You're absolved, Timothy. I mean, and Hugh's Australian too.
Fight for the country that you want to fight for, but fight, right? Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I do, you know, Band of Brothers has the famous, you know, were you a hero in the war? No, but I served in a company of heroes.
Oh, and God, dude.
This, which is, like, I can't even say it, like, saying it that cavalierly is, like, almost painful, but the way here we get this, you know, the quote about the freedoms that we enjoy did not come by accident. They were bought and paid for by my generation and the generations that preceded us. For that reason, this is the important part. For that reason, I believe the World War II generation deserves to be remembered. And, like, the way that it's almost like the opposite side of the spectrum as far as, like, importance, like, it's just saying the most basic thing about humanity, like, people deserve to be remembered, full stop. But obviously, right, here in this specific case, like, because of what we did, like, our stories deserve to be told, and most importantly deserve to be, like, remembered, and at least, like, contextualized and like continued to be learned about and analyzed. And, you know, people can debate the rights and wrongs of war, whatever. But at the end of the day, like these things that these people did and put themselves through ultimately for each other, I think is the piece of it that like I choose to hold on to.
Yeah, it's very well said. You know, off the top, you just talked about the emotional resonance of this documentary. There's a lot of different things a documentary can do. I've watched a lot of like kind of documentary featurettes. There's a ton on YouTube available to us now. That's kind of what's lovely about this different time having these properties. But I watched a lot of documentaries about the Bloody Hundredth, about the Air Force of World War II over these last couple of months. And that's been really cool to me. But this one in particular felt like emotionally centered. It felt less about like the nuts and bolts and let's talk about the B-17s and the positions of the crew and how the operations went. It was about the emotional wherewithal of these guys and about some of these survivors. And it was just so awesome to get to see Rosie and Crosby and Jimmy Stewart, for that matter, and Lucky Luckadoo, who I just want to note, Lucky Luckadoo, 102 years old, still alive, if I'm not saying that clearly, is the last surviving member of the 100th.
That's crazy.
It was good vibes. It just felt like a good emotional beat to close out on and to get that little bit of like, here's the boys, so you can know their faces.
To see their faces, even just in pictures, like there's something really powerful about that. And I was kind of worried as the documentary is like winding down, I'm like, are we not gonna get like anything about, you know, the Tuskegee Airmen and the Red Tails? And thankfully we did. And the fact that there's even footage of them speaking at some point, of like Jefferson and McComb. No, I can't. I'm getting his name wrong now. But I have to look it up. But to get their piece of story as well, and like some context of them, like I would have preferred to have a little bit more of that. But like, I get to your point, I was glad to see that and like ground these people in real life, if you will, because as we've talked about, like we're getting a historical fiction version of this, and like to now get this piece of it, and that's the grounding of it, right? Of like ground this, not just the air versus the land, but like ground it in like real life. And these people were real people who then had to go back to their regular lives. And that's what always makes me sad, like towards even the end of the documentary and the end of the series, of like the same point about me getting sad at the end of Band of Brothers. Like there's the real life part of it of like, oh, I was really enjoying this thing and now it's over. But also these men, like how are they supposed to go back to real life? And how are they went through this thing that they all meant so much to each other. And the show did a really good job of this, of like, there was almost like a, not a disappointment that the war had ended, but like they had gotten so used to that for so long under these incredible circumstances, the yo-yo that you were saying, that now it's like, oh, we have to turn that off. Oh, okay. I don't know how to be a quote unquote normal, like human again, because they've been through something like the doctor said in this series, like something that humans shouldn't have to go through. All that stuff always makes me sad, because it's the end of a piece of their lives, and then they just have to like, you know, go back and be a lawyer like Rosie.
It's emotionally like fraught, right? Yeah. And I get like charged up thinking about it, because again, like I think you just have to keep in context. Obviously, there was this publicity machine of Jimmy Stewart and then the kind of airwaves of the time of the 40s that talked about the American military and elevated, and these stories were told and retold when these guys came back. But so much of their experience just existed with them within the bubble of their group. It's the same with Band of Brothers. When you get Popeye at the end talking to Dick Winters, like, how am I going to tell anybody? How am I going to tell everybody?
Right,
it goes back to like the beginning of Masters of the Air, right? Of like saying, like when they're going up on those first missions, right? Yeah. Where Buck's like, you flew. Why didn't you tell me?
Yeah.
And it's like, what could I have said? Yeah. Now you know, right? Yeah. And that part of it translates. And that's where like I've kept saying it the whole way, and I'll just say it one last time here as we're kind of winding down and getting ready to say goodbye in a couple of ways. It's that these are important shows, man. Like, these are important stories to like immortalize and like have retold. And if we're going to dramatize any kind of like history, this is the kind of history that like I'm glad to see dramatized, because it just serves as a great on-ramp for so many people that don't know this history to find out a little bit about what actually happened, and to give a little bit of tribute to these guys that, like, you know, you hear the world leaders of the time at the beginning of the thing, like the axis of evil and the potential, but like, again, it was a movement of imperial conquest that would have left the world in a frighteningly different place if not for, you know, the response of the allied forces. And it's certainly a war that in retrospect, I think we can universally agree. We can't universally agree on anything these days, which is sad, but we can, those of us with sane minds can universally agree, it's a war that needed to be fought. And it's kind of awesome to see that like 20 years after Band of Brothers, we're able to do this again. And it still like hits for the most part, right? Yeah. It's hard to catch that lightning in a bottle again, Ariel. We've said it a million times, but like, this was a good show. Masters of the Air is cool.
It was. And I'm, you know, I'm really glad we got to cover it. I'm really glad I connected with this ultimately. I can't believe I'm saying this now. I feel like after episode 4, I would have been like, you're crazy.
Right.
But I connected with this in some, by the end of it, certainly, I connected with this like a little bit more emotionally than the Pacific, because the Pacific was, and we always talk about this, like it's so disparate, and like the characters and how there were so few like real connections between the characters south of like very obviously harrowing circumstances as always. And like those connections that they make as far as like working together and wanting to survive and like care for each other. But this was like, this had like it's had a little bit of the magic, I think, that Band of Brothers had. And I don't know, maybe it's the whole European theater thing versus the Pacific theater thing. I think there is something to that, but Masters of the Air, what a show. And I hope that people didn't give up after the first few episodes.
Yeah, me too, man. I heard it referred to a lot as dad TV, and I'm like, wait a minute. But then I realized like, oh yeah, I am the age of dads. This totally tracks, you know, the Pacific. Yeah. I think, you know, when you get to like the Snafu and Sledge relationship at the end is really strong.
That's always the one I think about, really.
And then Sledge and his other buddy, though, they're like, you know, they're passing trains in the night. That's the idea. Yeah. They can never get together. So I think that just that central Egan Clevens like pulls back so much to Band of Brothers, even the way that Rosie and Crosby's relationship evolves through the end. Mm-hmm. You know, you feel those connections. It's just a little bit spiritually closer. So I probably agree with you. I think that's like my take. Ranking things is arbitrary and reductive, but if so I had to, I would probably go Band of Brothers, Masters of the Air, the Pacific. And that's totally arbitrary and reductive.
And that's it. And I don't know, like, is there any, no, let me phrase this question correctly, because obviously there are many World War II stories to be told, but is there any world in which they decide to do some other facet of the war? I kind of feel like this one being in the air is what made it feel different and like kind of justified the existence of the show. I don't know. Does it feel like, I guess if I had to pick, like, it does kind of feel like an ending for the, perhaps this trilogy of series, but I guess nothing would surprise me if they, you know, went back.
Me either. I mean, I, you know, I can't help but think just like structurally a little bit about like the Navy feels like a big oversight, you know, like the ships and the entire, we're talking about wars that are fought across oceans and how important and instrumental those ships were to moving all of the war machines and stuff. And like, the way that we looked at the B-17s and the harrowing experience of being trapped in those things in combat, the experience of being trapped on like naval vessels in combat has to be its own really like kind of specific and exclusive thing that I'd be really curious about. And then like armored divisions, right? Some tank stuff, maybe we get a Fury, like Bernthal type story. I can imagine stuff like that, but you know, to your point, there's so many stories about World War II. It's like, who knows where they might go next. But you know, if these guys show up making a movie about World War II or a series, I'm gonna watch it, Ariel. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah, that's all. I'm imagining this is so like almost disrespectful to imagine, but I'm imagining like an Avengers style, like the certain characters from each different show, like coming together or meeting. It would be crazy.
Winters and Spears, like we're gonna need some help. And Spears is like, I know a guy, right?
And they come. We're gonna need a bigger boat. Enter the Navy.
Exactly. I want to see him like tunnel up through the sand into Stalag Luft 3 to break out the gang, you know? All right, boys.
Anything else you want to say about the doc or the series?
I think that we've covered our grounds. You know, I really appreciated the doc. Like I say, my biggest takeaway was just the emotional resonance, to your point. It was awesome to like get to see the boys again. And I thought it did a great job clarifying just some of the logistics that we didn't have such clarity on the show without necessarily like deep diving the machinations of like the process and the nuts and bolts. Like I thought it was pretty effective for an hour in and out of like, here's what the stuff that like you didn't realize about what was going on there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. Just like the really simple, like parabola diagram of like the falling bomb and like how it's travel based on the thing. I was like, oh, that makes sense to me. Like that's something that would have been, but again, how do you do that in a fictional show? Maybe one day they'll figure it out.
I also, I guess my final thing is like the total contrast between like, we have this super highly sophisticated bomb site that lets us drop bombs into pickles and nobody, pickle barrels, and nobody could like have it captured and then be like, we did not hit the pickle barrels. We did.
And I love that they're at some point in the documentary, they're like, you know, Britain had been bombing overnight and doing a horrible job of hitting their targets. And there was that like stick up his ass Brit who was like, oh, you Americans are bombing during the day. I was like, yeah, I guess it was because they could see their targets, dude.
I mean, you know, we're being very like flippant here at the end, but I did think like there was, you know, there was some fun moments there, like taking that kind of context of like, oh, okay, I see you guys still like with the subtle jabs. We're still posturing a little bit here at the end, you know.
Shout out to the Thanks Yanks flowers that we got to see a cool little picture of.
That was actually fantastic. Yes. Thanks Yanks. You do have to love it. Those tulip fields out there, they're like gorgeous. I couldn't imagine what that must have looked like, but very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, and they must be huge, right? To like put the to be able to like
They're
carve words out of whatever.
Yeah, Holland is like the bulb capital of the world. All like your tulips, the crocuses, daffodils, all this stuff comes out of there. And there are these incredible overview shots of like just thousands of acres like covered in rainbows area. It's gorgeous. Wow. Yeah.
Love that. I gotta go. If only I could.
Man, you and me both, take me with you.
Yeah, let's go. It seems like a much better, super, super selfishly and insensitively, it seems like a much better time to go right now. So I guess that's it for us as far as this. And as we close, you know, to your point before, we close the chapter on, we're closing a lot of chapters. I guess we're closing the book ultimately, right?
I think we are closing the book. We might be finishing a trilogy.
You and I certainly are, just like Steven Spielberg before us, Masters of the Air, and now the Bloody 100th documentary, and post-show recaps itself. You know, we have put on our parachutes and we are, you know, exiting the plane. What else have you got going on? What do you want to reveal to the audience about where people can find you going forward?
Yeah, I'm keeping busy out here. Post-show recaps is ending, and I'm so grateful for what this community has been over all the years. I don't know who has stuck with us all the way through Masters of the Air, Ariel, but anybody that enjoys hearing us talk about Germany should certainly go back and check out Post-show recap /Dark and listen to our coverage of Dark over on Netflix. I just want to hype that up one last time on the PSR airwaves. But going forward, I got a fun little project that I am working on with a couple of my partners in crime out there in the world. We are launching our own little podcast network, a spiritual successor to post-show recaps in many ways. We're going to be much smaller. We're going to be a little bit different, but it's going to be a lot of the coverage that I got to do over here at PSR. We are screen and page podcasts. We are up. We are live. We have our launch pod was out this week. I'm going to be doing coverage. We're doing a Wheel of Time reread while we wait for season 3 to come back. Ooh. Myths and Legends. That's going to be a fun show. My partner Taylor Ball and I are doing a podcast where we just go back to dig through the old media that we both love called What Did I Miss? Where every week we trade movies and television shows that one of us loves and the other one has missed. I am much older than Taylor, so it creates this fun back and forth of deep diving into like 80s fantasy fare and then early 2000s YA drama, Ariel. And then to me, my X-Men 97 is back. I'm covering.
Stop.
Oh my God. I'm covering the series weekly with the one and only Kevin Mahadeo. You may hear you pop up here, Ariel. There's an open door. I'd love to.
When I hear that call, my X-Men heart just jumps to join as well.
To me, my X-Men. So that's Screen and Page Podcast. We're up. We're live. You can search for us on iTunes. We're live there. Screen and Page Podcast. You should find us, pop right up. I know that it's not available on every platform yet. Some folks have said they haven't been able to find it on Spotify. If you go find my social medias, DM Philly on Twitter, you can find all the links to the podcast feed, to our website, to our social medias there. Screen Page Pod are our socials on Twitter, on TikTok, on Instagram. Screen and Page over on YouTube. We're going to be doing some live video components. Our Discord's up live, Ariel. Come hang out with us. We're going to adventure through nerd culture of the last 50 years, basically. And I'm really excited about it. And it should be a good time.
Nerd culture, one of my favorite cultures. Love it. That sounds so exciting. I'm so excited for you and to, you know, as soon as you said X-Men, oh my God, I'm going to stop talking about it because I'm just going to keep talking about it. We already talked about it before the pod for like 20 minutes.
We need to record a whole separate podcast when we're done here.
It's just like a reaction to the reaction to X-Men.
It's good, you guys. It's good.
It's pretty great. That's so exciting. Around here, I have a couple of things to wrap up. Just two things, two other episodes. I'm finishing 6 Feet Under with Dr. Amanda. We'll be doing our season 2 finale pod shortly, and that will be out, I believe, next week. And then myself and Grace are recording our final Pocho Recaps Theater also next week, so look out for that. I will have an upcoming announcement. I'll be doing something with some podcasting with Dr. Amanda going forward. I would suggest following her on social media, at Dr. Amanda R, Dr. Amanda R on Twitter. I'm also on Twitter at that other Ariel, and I'll be retweeting it, but she's definitely the more active one. And we will definitely have news shortly. We'll actually be, just like you guys did, you know, at some point recording a like full release information announcement pod to be released on the Pocho Recast feed, so people will be able to find it there if they are at all interested, which is wonderful. We just have some like logistical name things to work out and get everything sorted, but that is very, very close to happening. And yeah, I don't know what else there is to say. This has been incredible. Shout out to our Dark coverage again, like for sure, easily one of my top three, top two things I ever got to do on Pusher Recaps. Mm-hmm. An incredible show that I love so much that I think you, me, and Grace did, frankly, if I do say so myself, a wonderful job of covering.
Very good coverage. Yeah.
So look out for that. And we'll see you around. We'll see you around the feed. Thank you so much for flying with us all this time. Bye-bye.